Okay, so today we're doing Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 12, text 3. Tadidam shrotam icham o. Oh, sorry. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tadidam shrotam ichamo. Gaditam yadi manyase. Bruhina shradananam. Yasya jnana madachchuka. Tadidam shrotam ichamo. Gaditam yadi manyase. Bruhina shradananam. Yasya jnanam madachchuka. Tadidam shrotam ichamo. Gaditam yadi manyase. Bruhina shradananam. Yasya jnanam madachchuka.
Tadidam yadi manyase. Tad idam shrotam ichamo.
Kaditum yadi manyase.
Bruhina shraddhananam.
Yasya jnanam adachukaha.
Tad idam shrotam ichamo.
Kaditum yadi manyase.
Bruhina shraddhananam.
Yasya jnanam adyuk chakkam.
Tadidam shrotam ichamo.
Yaditum yadi manyase.
Bruhina shraddhananam.
Idam this.
Shrotam to hear.
Ichchama all willing. Gaditam to narrate. Yadi if. Manyasay. You think. Bruhi please speak.
Na we.
Shraddhananam.
Who are very much respectful.
Yasya, whose? Jnanam, transcendental knowledge.
Adat, delivered.
Sukha, Sri Sukadeva Goswami. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. We all respectfully want to hear about Him, Maharaj Pariksit, to whom Sukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this subject matter. Purport. Sukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Pariksit during the remaining 7 days of his life, and Maharaj Pariksit heard him properly, just like an ardent student. The effect of such a bona fide hearing and chanting of Srimad Bhagavatam was equally shared by both the hearer and the chanter. Both of them were benefited.
Out of the 9 different transcendental means of devotional service to the Lord prescribed in the Bhagavatam, either all of them, or some of them, or even one of them, are equally beneficial if properly discharged. Maharaj Prakrit and Sukadev Goswami were serious performers of the first 2 important items, namely the process of chanting and the process of hearing. And therefore, both of them were successful in their laudable attempt. Transcendental realization is attained by such serious hearing and chanting, and not otherwise. There is a type of spiritual master and disciple much advertised in this age of Kali. It is said that the master injects spiritual force into the disciple by an electrical current generated by the master, and the disciple begins to feel the shock. He becomes unconscious, and the master weeps for exhausting his store of so-called spiritual assets. Such bogus advertisement is going on in this age, and the poor common man is becoming the victim of such advertisement. We do not find such folk tales in the dealings of Sukadev Goswami and his great disciple, Maharaj Prakrit. The sage recited Srimad Bhagavatam in devotion, and the great king heard him properly. The king did not feel any shock of electrical current from the master, nor did he become unconscious while receiving knowledge from the master. One should not therefore become a victim of these unauthorized advertisements made by some bogus representative of Vedic knowledge. The sages of Namasharanya were very respectful in hearing about Maharaj Prakrit because of his receiving knowledge from Sukadeva Goswami by means of ardent hearing. Ardent hearing from the bona fide spiritual master is the only way to receive transcendental knowledge, and there is no need for medical performances or occult mysticism for miraculous effects. The process is simple, but only the sincere party can achieve the desired result. Om Aginata Mananda Shajan Anjana Shilakaya Chakshuna Militamiena Tasma Shri Gurudevena Maha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pabuna Chenamda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, first of all, I'd like to thank everybody for the temple management here for giving me the opportunity to speak this morning. I understand that it's both an honor and a privilege to be asked to give the Srimad Bhagavatam class, so thank you very much, and I hope I can say something that's worthwhile. So, opening back up again, actually. Yeah, so Prabhupada says here that there is a type of spiritual master and a disciple much advertised in this Kali, who it says here that master injects spiritual force into the disciple by an electrical current generated by the master, and the disciple begins to feel shocked. So, unfortunately, these types of spiritual masters and disciples are still around. They're still around. They're perhaps presenting a little variation on the theme. I met one young man, usually yesterday or the 2 or 3 days ago. I think it was yesterday. No, it was 2 or 3 days ago at San Jose State. And, you know, I approached him with the Bhagavad Gita and everything. And he said, oh, I can't, you know, this is, I can't remember his word for word, but the gist of it was he said he had a master, and he was so happy because when the master gave him the word, you know, the master gave him the word, and he just, by receiving the word, he was becoming increasingly enlightened. He said he just meditated on the word. I said, well, I tried to explain to him, I said, you know, that's nice. He accepted Bhagavad Gita, he accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I said, that's very nice. I mean, that's not exactly the process. I mean, you know, but he just kept, he was stuck on it. He was, you know, locked into that he had his master, and his master was enlightening him by that process. And it's exactly what Prabhupada says here. Such bogus advertisement is going on in this age, and the poor common man is becoming the victim of such advertisement. So he was the victim, obviously, of that advertisement. And unfortunately, that guru or master of his was, as Prabhupada says here, a bogus representative of Vedic knowledge. Yeah.
Did he buy a Gita?
Actually, he did. He did, and he gave a donation, and but I didn't really, I didn't belabor the point. I didn't try to like impress upon him how much he was an illusion. I was just more thinking in terms of, well, how can this person walk away with a book? So I kind of kept it really, I didn't really criticize his spiritual understanding very much. I just complimented him a lot. Anyway, he took the Bhagavad Gita, so that was good. yeah, so there's a lot of that still going on out there, unfortunately. And I don't know where these people get it from. I'm sure they have come up with something. Like, it seems like such an open and shut case to me as to what the correct understanding of the Vedic knowledge is, and what, you know, what the process is, because, well, possibly, unfortunately, I've come from such an ignorant background of Vedic knowledge and Vedic culture. I knew nothing about any of this before coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada and the Krishna Conscious Movement. So I'm just first hearing about all this from Prabhupada and, you know, the Parampara Disciple Succession. But, you know, it seems to me kind of plain. I mean, like, I know there's people from India and they've had exposure to, you know, Vedic knowledge through their upbringing like that, and they, you know, have various understandings of the Vedic knowledge. But, you know, like, as I said, it seems like this, at least for us, it's so clear. Like this morning, for instance, we were just chanting the Brahma Samhita. Okay, so Lord Brahma, he's at least acknowledged as certainly one of the, by everybody, I think all people in India will acknowledge that Lord Brahma is one of the top, most powerful demigods. I don't think worship of Lord Brahma is very big and popular in India, from what I can understand. But, you know, he's acknowledged. Here's his statement right there. We're chanting for like a half hour. I think that was the most chanting Sanskrit I ever did in one go, you know. But, you know, in the first verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, Anadi Radha Govinda, Sarva Karana Karana. The Krishna is the supreme controller. He's the cause of all causes. He's, you know, like that. So there's his statement. So, I mean, you know, if you're acknowledging him as one of the topmost demigods, I guess you got to, you know, also accept what he says. I mean, you're going to call one of the topmost demigods a liar or a fool? I mean, he knows what he's talking about, and this is what he's saying. And so some people might not be so much familiar with that, or even not that they're not so much familiar, but as I said, Lord Brahma, from what I can understand, is not worshipped as the supreme person so much in India, but there's a lot of Lord Shiva worshippers, from what I can understand, especially in South India. And there seems to be a big controversy down there as to, you know, who is supreme. Is it, you know, Vishnu or Shiva? And there's a lot of people who think Shiva, and there's a lot of people who think Vishnu. But just yesterday, we did an interesting thing yesterday. Myself and my two associates, we finished our reading the DVs and Guru Puja. And they were about to do the Bhagavatam class, and I just said, okay, let's just try something different today. I asked one of the boys, I said, can you pick a number from 1 to 10? And he picked 4. And I asked the other one, pick a number from 1 to 50. And he picked 24. And I said, now you pick, and I said, I went back to the first one, pick a number now from 1 to 50. He said, 33. So I said, okay. We went over here, and we grabbed the fourth canto, chapter 20, and we turned to chapter 24, verse 33. And it was really nice because we just happened to go right into the chapter called Chanting the Song Sung by Lord Shiva. And the 33rd verse was the first verse where Lord Shiva actually began his prayers, which go for another 35 verses, right? And in each prayer, he begins the prayer by saying, I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Person. You know, it's just so clear that he's acknowledging that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's glorifying him. For 35 verses, you know, which is no mean feat. You know, it's no small thing. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, from what I can understand, that even among, you know, the people who appreciate Vedic literature, it's the topmost of the Puranas. It's called the Amalam Purana, the Spotless Purana. And it has, like, status, you know, a very exalted status, even among all the other Puranas. So, there it is, you know. In the Amalam Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva himself is stating that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, That's why I said, for me, it seems like, well, okay, what's the problem here? You know, what do you want? What is it that you're, what more do you want? The person who you're claiming is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is denying that, and he's stating that, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Brahma, who's maybe the other contender, he's also stating that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. So, as I said, for me, I don't see where the confusion is, but I'm sure if I went down to South India and kind of went to some of those, you know, temples where they'd have their points, they'd have their arguments. I don't preach on that level, so I'm not so aware of them or familiar with them, but, you know, they must have, they'd have to come up with their stuff. Well, they're,
In the 10th chapter or so, where he says, all these demigods and acharyas before you have acknowledged you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's referring to the same thing.
He goes on to say, and now you yourself are telling that to me. The Krishna himself is directly stating that. So as I said, I don't see how they, you know, what the confusion is, but yeah. But anyway, as I was saying, I don't really...
The example which Prabhupada has given, the electric shock current, do you know whom he's referring?
Yeah, sure. That's Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, right? That
whole sometimes he, during his conversation with devotees, I think he mentioned his name, but maybe intentionally he didn't write his name.
I don't think he doesn't even want to dignify that whole theatrical performance by mentioning their names. It's kind of giving them more credibility than they deserve. Yeah.
The Maharishi cult that came and preached transcendental meditation. Because I know in graduate school, when I went to one of their sessions, there were two sessions, and all that you were given is a mantra to recite, and then you are kind of on your own. So this is the same thing. One is giving one a mantra, and then...
Yeah, in principle, yeah. It's the same idea. It's another unauthorized process. But anyway, for the most part, our where we come into the picture, we just have to clean up the mess. Because at least most of us, at least myself, I don't preach on that level. You know, I'm not like, I won't be going today to one of those temples in Fremont or in Sunnyvale to talk to the head priest and debate with him as to, you know, who is the supreme person. You know, we're just going to be dealing with all the victims. You know, all the people who have unfortunately become subjected or come in contact to that first before we had a chance to get to him, and have become... you know, have living with these, functioning with these misconceptions, you know, as their working paradigm, so to speak. And you know, to deal with them, we don't really have to, we want to be knowledgeable, but I think just the basic stuff that we've, you know, getting from Prabhupada here is sufficient. They're very confused. They don't have, you know, generally clear understanding. There's another fellow I stopped and, same sort of thing, you know. He was, I worship all the gods. I said, I handed him the Bhagavad Gita. He says, I have this. I know this book. I said, okay. What's the main point? What is the main message of the Bhagavad Gita? And he fumbled around. He said, well, to do good work. I said, so that's certainly, you know, possibly. I mean, that's a message in the Bhagavad Gita. But what's the main? You know, what's the main message of the Bhagavad Gita? He said, well, you know, I'm not sure. I said, anyway, I worship all the gods. And I said, well, anyway, here, I opened up the Bhagavad Gita. I showed him 1865 and 1866. I said, look, this is, you know, who do you accept Krishna as? He says, well, you know, we accept Krishna as God. Okay, so here's what he's saying. He's saying, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your obeisances to me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this, Krishna, my dear friend, and abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. You know, I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So, I mean, there it is. He said, anyway, I can't know. He tried to wiggle out of it somehow. But, they just, you know, they're just not very clear. They go to these different, they come in contact with these different temples or different organizations, and they just kind of get their heads filled with that stuff, and they don't really think about it very carefully, because if they did, they have to reject it, but they just go with it, and, you know, then we have to straighten them out, so to speak. So that's our position. And that's nice. Actually, one on that point, Prabhupada, somebody just showed me the other day, when we were talking, you know, we were reading this chapter, chanting the songs sung by Lord Shiva, one of the devotees came up with a letter that was just recently sent to him by his the guru he's aspiring from. It was Bhakti Vikash Maharaj And he sent them a letter saying that Prabhupada, in this letter, Bhaktivikas Maharaj was quoting something Satsarup Maharaj had in one of his books that Prabhupada told a sannyasi, he didn't mention the name, that if he learned, there was particular 30 verses he could learn in the Bhagavad Gita that would enable him to defeat any of the impersonalists or mayavadis if he just learned those particular 30 shlokas. He didn't say what they were or didn't mention that sannyasi's name. So we're going to do a little further research and try to come up with those, because that would be nice to know. Prabhupada's conviction was that if you just knew those 30 verses, then you got it. You don't need, to be like a very comprehensive scholar. So, just getting back to this translation here, this is the sages of Namasharanya who were addressing Shonaka Rishi here. The sage Shonaka said, "Is that what's going on?" The sages of Namasharanya are conversing with Shonaka Rishi. So this, I think, it's the sages of Namasharanya at this point who is. Suta Goswami.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's
the spokesman,
the
right? Yeah. That's it, right? Yes, Shonaka Rishi is the spokesman for the sages of Namasharanya, and he's respectfully requesting Suta Goswami to speak about Maharaj Prickett. So why do they want to hear about Maharaj Prickett and Sugadev Goswami, the sages of Namasharanya? Because they were spiritually successful. They achieved perfection, complete perfection in devotional service. That's why they want to hear about them. And that makes sense. You want to hear about, because everybody's, striving for success in something, and you want to hear about the success stories so you can follow in the footsteps and become like that too. So that's why we're hearing about this. And that's a good reason to be hearing about this. So the thing is, we want to become spiritually successful. And so we should, as devotees, we should become very keen and eager to try to understand what are the different ways in which we can become, what are the tricks, or the, not tricks, secrets. It's an open secret. Prabhupada doesn't make any, it's an open secret how to become spiritually successful. But because it's such an important thing, and because we're desiring that so much, it's why it's worth talking about, and as Prabhupada said, sometimes making threadbare, kind of like discussing it till it's threadbare. It's really such an important thing, you can just get right into it. So just yesterday we were reading from the Transcendental Diary by Hari Sari, and it was 1976. It was in Mayapur, and Prabhupada was walking with the sannyasi disciples on the roof of the Long Building, which was under construction. At one point, he was taking walks up there. He wasn't feeling particularly well, and when he didn't feel like going a long distance, just being in a place where he could stop at any time and just go back, he walked up on the roof of the Long Building. So he was up there, and at one point in the conversation, Pancha Dravida Maharaj asked him, "Prabhupada, what is the secret of your success?" He asked him, And, it started off, Prabhupada just mentioned, "The secret of my success is I did not compromise on the words of the Bhagavad Gita. Whatever Krishna says, I say it like that." Because it was talking about how Prabhupada was heavily criticized some scientist or something, something like that, using the word muda and rascal like that. And then Prabhupada was making the point that it's not me saying that. Krishna says like that. Namam duskrita namudha papajante naradama mayaya pratyana suram bhavmashta. So when I say like that, I'm repeating the words of Krishna, so I'm bona fide. So, and then the conversation went off into another subject. And then Pancha Dravida then asked that question. He said, "Prabhupada, could you repeat that? What is the secret of your success?" And Prabhupada repeated it, that he didn't compromise on the words of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, just as it is. So, that's one thing that we could note with profit, that to be uncompromising, to try to present it as it is. And once again, for me, that doesn't involve facing big high-level personalities and confronting them in a very shastrically aggressive way. My dealings are with the common man on the street. But I try to, incorporate that principle into what I'm doing. Like, for instance, when I show people the books, I try to make a point of, rather than just kind of giving them the philosophy, in a very simple, succinct way that's going to be interesting and, you know, sort of, what's the word, just kind of pique their curiosity to want to know more. And basically what I do is very simple. I just show them the picture of change. First I show them the picture of karma. that's a bit of a popular idea this day, you know, what goes around comes around. So I kind of draw them in on that one. I show them that picture, which is an incredible picture. People all over the country. I had the good fortune of doing the Warp Tour this summer with about five other very sincere brahmacharis. And nationwide, when you show people that picture and they go, whoa, you know, they're kind of like, whoa. And then you kind of quickly explain it to them. Well, some people get it right away, some people don't. And you just say, it's a man with a bull's head, that's a bull with a man's head. It's just showing how the roles get reversed. You know, kind of, you know, what goes around comes around. The kind of things we do affect us in the future. And they go, oh, I'm down with that. Yeah, you know, I'm all about karma. I believe in that, you know. So that's, you know, it's our philosophy. And then I show them the picture changing bodies. And I show this is the same person, just different stages. And showing how the spiritual essence continues. You got to really make it how the spiritual essence continues even after the body's finished. And they go, oh. One kid said to me the other day, he said, whoa. He said, that's far. I thought we were just worm food. He really did. He just said, wow. I said, that's good news. I thought we were just worm food. I said, no, you weren't just worm food. Don't worry. So I show them those two things, you know, because that's about as much as they can, you know, you could do anyway. And then I just say, oh, yeah, I point to the picture of Lord Chaitanya. Usually I'm showing them the pictures in the JSD. And I point to the picture of Lord Chaitanya dancing in the Rathiyatra Kirtan there, you know, like in ecstasy. And I'm just saying, the book just talks about how to progress towards enlightenment, close it, self-discovery, you know, same idea. And then I just close. I just tell them, you know, we're trying to distribute what's left at 50,000 copies. Sometimes I might show them in the cover page where it shows 50,000 copies. And we're a nonprofit. I take out my, you know, ISKCON badge, nonprofit. I just point to that. People give a donation. Could you give a donation to help out? And, you know, that's it. So the point is that the result's the same. You know, I've tried using all sorts of, like, different, like, lines, you know, but the thing about helps to relieve stress. And you could stick that in there a little bit or just kind of. But I find whatever lines I use, I get the same results. I might as well speak the philosophy as best, you know, I can according to time, place, and circumstance. Because at least by doing that, I'm hearing and chanting. And it was like, if I'm just saying some gobbledygook, some mumbo-jumbo, that's not really our philosophy. That's just some sort of, like, concocted sales pitch or something like that, which is not quite, you know, it's just appealing to some sentiment or whatever, then, you know, you all day long you're hearing and chanting that. Even though you're doing it for Krishna, it's not, you know, it's not pure transcendental. This is, you know, the idea is to try to stay closer to pure transcendental sound vibration. So at least all day long, I'm not quoting Sanskrit verses, you know, so much directly, but it is the philosophy, and, you know, so that's good. We get the benefit of doing that, and the result is the same. It's just as good. At least that's what I've experienced. I haven't got better results when I tried other things, and this is, you know, enlivening. So on that point of, you know, not compromising what Krishna says, keep it, you know, to the exactly, you know, our philosophy. There's no need to do anything else. Actually, further confirmation of that was given by Prabhupada in a nice meeting he had back in 1975 in Atlanta. This is the one meeting Prabhupada had with the book distributors as a group. Well, actually, maybe at least in America. There was one other one in, I believe, in London. But I'll mention that one briefly too, actually, because it's also related. But in this particular one, 1975 at Atlanta, Prabhupada met with the book distributors, and the spokesman for that was actually Tripurari Maharaj, who's no longer in ISKCON, but he's still Tripurari Maharaj, but, you know, preaching on his own. And so he said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, sometimes when we go to when we visit the different temples, they ask us to, you know, give classes in book distribution technique." So Prabhupada said, "So what do you say? What do you tell them?" And he said, "Well, you know, we tell them first they have to chant their rounds and follow the regulative principles, and like that." And then Prabhupada interrupted him and said, with a lot of enthusiasm, Prabhupada said, "Yes, that is our only technique, to become very devout followers of the rules and regulations." So at least on that occasion, Prabhupada was not stressing the importance of, you know, technique, or just very simple. Just that is our only technique, to become very devout followers of the rules and regulations. In other words, purity is the force. The potency is going to be there for somebody who's doing like that, you know, doing those things, chanting their rounds, following the regulative principles, etc. They're going to have potency and, you know, need to have sort of some sophisticated sales techniques. Just that will ensure the success. And because one interesting example is that once there was this man, he was observing the devotees selling books like anything. I think it was in the Chicago O'Hara airport. And he was a businessman, a young businessman. He thought, okay, wow, this is good, you know. And he approached the devotees and he bought a large stock of books, thinking that he would sell them. He wasn't a devotee, you know, he was just an ordinary person. And he'd make a lot of money. And he bought a large quantity of books and he went out there and he started trying. He couldn't sell one book, as the story goes, you know. And then after getting totally frustrated after X amount of time, he went back to the devotees and said, look, I don't know how you guys do it. I haven't been able to sell one book. Can you just buy these back for me? Can you please sell it? You know, buy them back for me. And the devotees took them back. So there was that. And so that was further confirmation on that point of, you know, just keeping it. Yeah.
I had a variation on that experience that I was distributing books in Los Angeles airport, and I had a businessman approach me, or I think it was two guys, and said, you know, we want to hire you to do this for our company. We've got some solar energy thing. You're such a good salesman, you know. You could sell anything to anybody. Come work for our company.
Yeah, right. They don't understand how it's happening.
Bharati Maharaj was visiting and he had come to Sankirtan Central where we have the books and all that. So he had come and then he wanted to rest for a while and then he would be going out and book distributing. I think he was going to go out in Santa Cruz or something. So what had happened is he had forgotten his bead bag. He normally carries it. He was asking Vaisheshika Prabhu, do you have some beads? So he said, well, we can get you some, but we are going to Santa Cruz. So he said, well, how am I going to distribute books unless I chant first? He was just kind of giving his experience that he chants a lot and then these things automatically flow from that. So
yeah, that's it. That's the process. And there's one letter Prabhupada wrote to Brahmananda Prabhu. I don't know what Brahmananda said in his letter, but Prabhupada was at some point in the letter, he must have asked about getting Krishna's mercy or like that. So Prabhupada said, regarding Krishna's being kind upon us, should be on the principle that Arjuna followed. And Prabhupada, paraphrasing Prabhupada, he made the point that Arjuna was a warrior, and Krishna never told him, sit down on the chariot, I'll take care of everything. You know, he instructed him to fight. Yudhyasya mamanusmanacha, like that. So Prabhupada concludes, he goes, so ordinarily we have to try our best to our best capacity to achieve something, and by Krishna's grace, all of a sudden we shall see everything will be there. This sort of help from Krishna is transcendental happiness. See? So Krishna's grace. It's Krishna's grace. So our objective is we have to try to figure out how to get Krishna's grace. It's that's how things happen. By the mercy of Krishna, not by, you know, our prowess as salespeople or whatever, or expert managers. And then also, even in the Bhagavad Gita, there's that nice, in the chapter 9, text 5, in the purport, there's a couple sentences Prabhupada says at one point. He says, we may think of doing something, but there may be so many difficulties. And sometimes it is not possible to do as we like. Maybe that's a real understatement of the millennium. You know. He says, but when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything happens so wonderfully that we cannot even imagine how it is being done. So, you know, it's the same idea again, that it's, you know, Krishna is really the doer. And so on this point of becoming successful in spiritual life, there's, you know, so many different things Prabhupada said, but another very interesting thing he said, which is particularly relevant to this group here, and which you're already, you're already aware of, whether you're aware of this statement or not, is on several different occasions, Prabhupada said, to be very quickly recognized by Krishna, preaching is the shortcut process. To be very, not just because our objective, our business is to become recognized by Krishna. So Prabhupada, on more than one occasion, he said, not just to be recognized, not even just quickly, but to be very quickly recognized by Krishna, preaching is the shortcut process. In one arrival address in Vrindavan, he was telling the devotees, he said, you know, it's nice that you've come here to Vrindavan, but don't become, you know, this is in paraphrasing, don't become like Babaji's, you know, and just channel out for your gorgeousness. You know, he said, that's not the idea. You know, he says, you have to preach. You have to preach, you know. And then there was one morning walk in Australia, I think it was in Melbourne. Hari Sari was saying to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, it's difficult, you know, to these people aren't interested in anything, you know. And Prabhupada said, yeah, that's preaching. It's difficult. And he said, but you have to go. They're not crying out. You're wearing Maya, please come, but you have to go. And, you know, that's in those two different occasions is when he, you know, made that statement to be very quickly recognized by Krishna. Sometimes he said very easily recognized by Krishna. Preaching is the shortcut process. And, you know, that's, of course, right in line with, you know, the statement of Lord Chaitanya, Yadideke Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh, Amara Agyaya Guruhana Tanaidesh, that wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. And in this way, become a spiritual master and deliver everybody in the land. There's one place in the Hari Sari diary where Prabhupada was speaking, and he made a statement, something to this effect. He acknowledged that chanting Hare Krishna, that's the Yuga Dharma, you know, that's the process for self-realization. But he said, but our mission is, and he kind of made a distinction between, he said, our mission is, yadida, and then he quoted that verse, indicating, you know, that the idea is, okay, yeah, we have to chant Hare Krishna, but that's not enough. It's not enough that, you know, just we personally, you know, try to advance, but we have to take up the mission, and the mission is to give it to everybody else. So, if, you know, we have to do it for ourselves, yeah, of course, no doubt, you know, but we have to, if we're going to fully, you know, follow the mood of the spiritual master, and we have to try to give it to everybody else. And of course, Prabhupada is, you know, of course, the greatest example of that. I mean, you know, just, yeah.
So, how do you do the Srimad Bhagavatam distribution in comparison to small book, the Bhagavad Gita? Like, is there any different techniques you use to, you know, sell or distribute the Srimad Bhagavatam? Is it on a street? Have you made anyone who has really bought Srimad Bhagavatam, or is it a different contact? Can you tell something?
I haven't been doing it. Last time I was doing Srimad Bhagavatam was, let's see, said about 30 years ago. To be honest with you, when I was in Australia, I was working with this devotee, Gopinath Acharya, very nice devotee, and we had a program there called Contract Sales. And we were selling sets of books. And, you know, he was a lot better at that than me. We had a whole presentation. You know, we used to go to there was people who would send in, you know, they didn't have computers in that at that time. Well, they probably did, but we didn't in Australia, and we weren't using them. So our system for keeping contacts or track of leads was in the back of the BTGs or in the back of the books. They had a little coupon. And people would, if they wanted further information or more books, they would just fill in the coupon and send it in. They'd cut it out of the book and send it in. And the BBT would get that, and then they would fill the order. And this devotee who was in charge of doing that, he used to keep the coupons. So when we started the program, we got all the coupons from him, and we went around and we charted, we, you know, got a map out, and we plotted them out on the map, you know, geographically where they went. We made like a route, and we loaded up our station wagon with different sets of books, and we just went out. We just popped in on them at, you know, around dinner time. And we knocked on the door. Hey, hi, we're from the BBT. You have some of our books. We have an interesting new program we'd like to tell you about. Is it okay if we come in? Just take, you know, we have a little gift for you as well. And people would invite us in. And about 50% of the people, we were amazed at this, about 50% of the people who gave even just $5 or more, you know, who just showed some nominal interest in the books, they wound up taking a set of books. And we made it easy for them. We used to, you know, take a deposit of as little as like $50 or $100, and then they pay it off in installments. And that program ran for about 2 or 3 years. Gopinath Acharya sold about 500 sets of books like that. And before that, like everybody else, all the other doors, we used to sell the Bhagavatams as they would come out. I remember when I joined, they were probably, I think the one that was just coming out was the 3-2. I think the 3-1 was already out. So then the 3-2 would come out, and we'd distribute the 3-2. And then the 3-3 would come out, and we'd distribute the 3-3. And you remember that? Which was a lot of fun. And devotees used to, you know, really enjoy that. But now we don't really, I don't do it because I'm not selling sets of books really at this point. So I don't really try. Although there is a mood among some of the, you know, serious distributors here in North America, they'd like to see Srimad Bhagavatam First Canto Part 1 reprinted. And I think that would be nice. I actually think that That's even more reader-friendly than the Bhagavad Gita. You know, and that could just be my illusion or something like that, but it's just, it's, for me, it's easier to, when I read it, putting on the, you know, in the mindset of like a brand new person coming to Krishna consciousness, I think that's, it has all the philosophy, of course, you know, and I think it's more reader-friendly than even the Bhagavad Gita. So I'd like to see that happen. The reason it's not in print now is because previously when we did have that as a mass distribution book back, I guess about 10 years ago or something like that, and some reason it was sat around a bit. It didn't go, you know, move very quickly. But if devotees, you know, if devotees can get the BBT to believe that we're going to distribute them, they'll print it. They're just not so buoyant at the moment financially, so it's hard for them to print a lot of books and make them in stock. But on the Bhagavatam. So anyway, it's wonderful that I'd like to just congratulate this yatra because you know. That's the instruction, yare deka tare kare Krishna, but, you know, preach, and you're doing it. And I was just commenting to my associates and different devotees that, you know, this is, to the best of my knowledge, this is the first time in America where, there's been like a congregation that's been so active, not just in sadhana, but in actually in preaching and taking so much responsibility for organizing preaching activities systematically, you know, engaging in preaching and it's wonderful. This is like a first, to the best of my knowledge, within North America and, Australia and New Zealand. It hasn't happened, you know. And so it's wonderful. You're doing, you know, what you're doing is great, and it's an inspiration to devotees all over. It's actually sending shockwaves to devotees in all other parts of the United States because they're thinking, well, what's going on here? Here we are. We've been devotees. Our temple has been here this long, and we're devotees this long. And here's this place that just started up. When did it start up? 5 years ago? 10 years ago? Maximum? And these people are devotees. How long are they? 2 years? 3 years? 4 years? And they look at these results. You know, what's going on here? And it just makes them feel like, what are we doing? We've got to do something, you know? So it's good. You're putting the pressure on, you know. You want to say something? Yeah.
When you were talking about the first canto, I thought, what a great idea that is, because it's such a powerful book that Srila Prabhupada was writing the first canto before he came to the United States. And those purports and the preface and there's so many purports in the first canto, part one, and the second chapter, and the first three chapters, you know, that are just full of... like really literary power, you know, and it really is a shame that we haven't been distributing that so much because it's such an important book. So
if you discuss among yourselves and you decide you want it, you just have to, BBT just, they're on the, you just need a little bit more encouragement that tips the scales because the devotees who did the Warp Tour, you know, we had a meeting and we decided we needed some new books because you can't keep showing people the same titles every year. So we were pushing for that, but, you know, sorry?
Many people say
they have Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, be honest with you, even when we do this concert, this Warp Tour, it's a concert tour that goes around the country, mostly young people. But you meet a lot of people that are telling us, tell us they've already have the JSD or the SSR, you know, Journey of Self-Discovery or Science Self-Realization. So we wanted some different title, and we were asking for that. But they were feeling, we don't want to print a lot and get stuck with them, you know, because you guys are the only ones. So if they get a little bit more reassurance that, don't worry, we're going to distribute them. They'll print it. They'll print whatever we want. But they just have to feel confident that, it's going to happen because, as I said, they're just not financially that buoyant at the moment, so they can't afford to print so many different titles and have them sit there in the warehouse.
At least in the Indian community, immediately they say, I have Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, that's the response I get, too.
And immediately they say, I have it. Then I say, well, you may have Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken by Krishna. Then I show them Krishna book. This is about Krishna. So the Krishna book is something that Prabhupada has put a lot of philosophy in Krishna book. So I tell them that. And then they say, I know Krishna stories. Then I pull them into one of the last pictures. It's Krishna meeting Vishnu. Do you know that? and then right there, they kind of say, how is this possible? I say, that's super excellent power of Krishna. I just quote that title that Prabhupada has given. So that Krishna book moves just by the strength of saying.
Yeah.
I think in the same way, Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto can be distributed on the strength that this is not Bhagavad Gita. This is, about Krishna.
Actually, when a devotee decides to distribute a book, it gets distributed. I took Krishna books out one day. I went down to, we have a good spot down in where we are, Camp Oceanside, which is right near Camp Pendleton. It's the biggest marine base in the United States. So I went down there one day with a lot of Krishna books, and thinking I was going to, because you normally I do the Bhagavad Gita, you know, which is really good with them. I just say, hey, this is an ancient war story, check it out, you know, and I show them the pictures of the, you know, the end cover, there's the picture of the two armies on the battlefields, that's how they used to fight back in the old days, you know, and they really relate to that. But I thought I'd try the Krishna book. Well, I didn't do too well. But when I went on the Warp Tour, there was a devotee, Bhakta Philip. He's actually, unfortunately, he distributes KBI books. He's kind of got some philosophical misunderstandings as far as we're concerned at this point. But he had the Krishna book, Prabhupada's Krishna book, and he was doing that, just like, you know, that was one of his books. You know, he had the Bhagavad Gita and the Krishna book, and he was just doing that, and he was, you know, without batting an eyelid, you know, he was just, the Krishna books were going out. And recently on our party, one of these other, Bhakta Ben is with me, but there's another boy, Bhakta Tim, who joined about the same time. And he was trying the Krishna books at the college, and they were going out just like the Bhagavad Gita. He just, you know, he didn't have a mental thing about it. Oh, this is the Krishna book. It's going to be too esoteric or whatever. No, he just, and he was distributing. So, like, you know, once the devotee gets, once you get it in your head that, yeah, this is no problem, you know, and the people take it. So they go out, yeah.
Prabhuji, I have actually three questions, but sorry, but all of them are regarding this book distribution only, which you are doing the most. So I think you are the best person to answer these questions. Oh, so first question is regarding this the picture that you mentioned about the effect, about the karma, what goes around comes around. That picture is actually someone killing a bull, and So I'm somewhat afraid when we show that picture to the audience, you know, the people in general, because most of them are actually indirectly or directly, they're killing the cows and all. I'm afraid of how do they react if they know that, you know, if you kill a bull, for example, you know, you can become a bull in the next life. Yeah. So how do you just handle that?
Well, the way I do it is I'm aware of what I'm showing them, you know. But I do it in the mood of like, hey, check this out. Isn't this far out, you know? I don't really do it in the mood of like preaching and, you know, I don't like, you're going to hell, you know, this is going to happen to you. No, I just do it in the mood of, hey, isn't this far out? And people, a lot, especially among the younger people, they're into ghastly things, you know? So they just kind of get off on the fact that, wow, this is ghastly, you know? And they don't put two and two together. They don't connect that, wow, actually, I'm eating meat. And that's later on. They're going to, you know, 1 in 10 people, not even 1 in 10, probably maybe 1 in 50 people or maybe 1 in 100 people I show that to, they'll go like, ooh, that's disturbing. I get that. I got that about last weekend. We went to the Shoreline Amphitheater to do this concert that was there, and those were kind of like very middle-class white, you know, I don't know, maybe more wealthy people, but I was going around from car to car for a while there, and I got that 2 or 3 times. They go, oh, this is disturbing, you know, but for the students and most people, they just kind of like, whoa, far out. That's a cool picture, you know? And they think, you know, they'll think about it later. They'll get them, you know? So it's effective. It's powerful.
Do you say that this man is killing a bull and in the next life he can become a bull?
I don't spell it out that far. I just say, look, this is a picture. And I show them the picture and they go, whoa. Just right away they go, whoa. Because, you know, this just looks like the devil or something.
Yeah, they won't ask you to say, you know, what it is, because...
Well, I tell them. I say, this is a man with a bull's head, and that's a bull with a man's head. And the picture is just trying to show how the roles get reversed. Uh-huh. You know, how the kind of things we do. I make it, try to present that as a general principle, not so much, you know, getting into the specific of that, you know, if you kill an animal, you're going to come back as an animal, be killed by that animal you killed. I just try to present it as a general principle that... This picture is trying to show how the kind of things we do will eventually affect us in the future. You know, karma, what goes around comes around. And they can usually relate to that. And then I just go on right on to the next picture. And usually I get a favorable response from that. They go, yeah, I'm down with karma. I'm all about karma. I live, this is me, you know, something like that. And then I show them changing bodies. And, you know, like that.
So second question I have is, that's nice, Prabhuji. Second question is regarding the Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1 that you mentioned. Who are the When you mentioned Canto 1, are you referring to Canto 1, Part 1?
Yeah, that's what they did.
Okay.
Because Canto 1, if you have the whole first canto, it's this thick. Uh-huh. But if you just do Canto 1 part, it was a book about that thick. You remember it. It was blue, and it had the standard cover and everything. Oh, you might have one up there.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Actually, yeah. That's the old format. They did a special format for the mass distribution, which was a little, without the dust cover.
So we distribute the first parts. Who will be the target audience for such books?
Everybody.
Everyone? Okay.
Everybody. Everybody could read that. As I said, it's so reader-friendly because it's more of a story. I mean, Bhagavad Gita, you have to concentrate a bit, and it's pretty philosophical and... But that's, I think, it's easier to read.
Even the ones who may not have any idea about Bhagavad Gita also, may not have even heard about Bhagavad Gita or other scriptures concerning Krishna, even they can be given the part one of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. No, that's what I'm saying. It's out of print. We did it. At one time we had it, and devotees want it again. You know, because there's also a mood among some of these distributors. They want to distribute things that Prabhupada actually specifically did as books. And there's like some of the books we distribute, which I think is perfectly okay, are compilation books. Like, for instance, Journey to Self-Discovery, Science of Self-Realization, Quest for Enlightenment. It's all Prabhupada's material. It's lectures that were transcribed and edited, conversations that once again that were transcribed and edited. It's all Prabhupada's material, but it's that format. Whereas, for instance, Bhagavad Gita, Isopanishad, Srimad Bhagavatam, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Nectar of Devotion, for example, are books, Easy Journey to Other Planets, are books that are books that Prabhupada wrote as books. So some devotees make a bit of a distinction, and they're leaning towards desiring to distribute the books that Prabhupada, material that Prabhupada gave us as intended to be as books, as opposed to the other stuff, which is good too, you know. I mean, yeah.
Like, how do you judge like the spots? Like, when you go for massive book distribution, like we want to distribute more books, so we'll locate a spot like door to door or some events. So sometimes we are exhausted with the, like, most of them we are meeting the same people again and again. Like, if you go to the Indian festival, so they'll come again to the next Indian festival. So how do you judge, like, where to go and, like, in your experience?
Well, for the last 15 years, for the most part, we were doing the airport. But after 9/11, we couldn't do the airport, so we started doing schools. And then you just go around, basically, and you see what's favorable. I mean, I'll give you one good experience on, Francis. I was in, this is about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, I was in Los Angeles, and it was before the Warped Tour, not this past May, but the May before that, and there's this one devotee, Parmeshwar, who was in Los Angeles, just, because the schools had already closed by then, but so he had some time, about 2-3 weeks in between when the Warped Tour began and when the schools closed. So he suggested that we go to one of these swap meets, in a Latino-Hispanic area. And he said he'd done them, in different parts of the country, and they were good, mostly for small books. So we went, and he took me one in Los Angeles, and it was an amazing experience, the first 45 minutes, I had culture shock. It was like being in Mexico. I mean, there was nothing about that place that reminded me of, that made me feel like I was in the United States of America. The music, the smells, the people, they were only speaking Spanish, Everything was like I was in Mexico, whoa. It's even hard to speak English. Most of the people didn't speak English, although they did. So anyway, I did get used to it, though. And then I was trying the small books, but I wasn't really getting, there wasn't enough satisfaction in that. So I thought, fortunately we had the Bhagavad Gita in Spanish. So I had the English. Yeah, sorry?
Talcom OS.
Yeah, Talcom OS. So I just was going to him with Talcom OS, and I had the English one there. And I knew a little Spanish, from high school.
As it is.
In Spanish, yeah. And anyway, people took very nicely. So much so that it became, you know, such a good experience. I said, hey, you know what? These people are they're very special people. Next to Indian people, these Latino Hispanic people are they're very devotional. Actually, to be honest with you, everybody except for the mainstream Americans is pretty receptive. You know, Latino Hispanics are really nice. Filipinos are really nice. One time, this is about 2 years ago, I was coming back from a concert that petered out. I was with some other devotees, and we wound up doing Daly City, just by San Francisco, shop to shop. And I was with this devotee, Omkar, who's a brahmachari in New Dwarka. I think we started about 3:30 in the afternoon because, we tried other places. We went to Haight-Ashbury before that. We went to some street fair before that in a real white middle-class neighborhood. We were totally shut out. Neither one of us distributed one book in about 2 hours of attempting it. And then we went to Haight-Ashbury, and that was okay. That was kind of something. Then we went shop to shop in Daly City. It was on Saturday, starting at about 3:30, 3:45. And we both did really good. A lot of Filipino people, some Latino Hispanic, and I think some Asian, but, you know, really sweet people. So, and getting back to the Latino Hispanic, so, you know, I said to him, hey, is there a way we could do this during the week? And he couldn't. We both came up with the idea, let's just go to the neighborhoods where they are. So in Los Angeles, actually, I went onto the computer and we checked out some websites that give demographics. We have the biggest concentration, outside of Mexico and those countries, Los Angeles, greater metropolitan area, has the greatest concentration of Latino Hispanics of any place in North America. Not just like a little bit, but by far. But, you know, it's like half the population, to be honest with you. Of the 20 million people in the greater Los Angeles, 10 million are Latino Hispanic, either, you know, descent or... So we started doing all those neighborhoods. You know, we went down Cesar Chavez Boulevard and, you know, like that. And it was good. We were doing as good, if not better, than we were doing the airport. You know, the airport was open at that time, but, you know, we just went with the Spanish Bhagavad Gita and the English Bhagavad Gita. So I guess you just got to experiment. And I would suggest go for the other ethnic groups. Unfortunately, that's been my experience, that the mainstream white American middle-class people with money, they feel they have a certain sense of entitlement. You know, that's kind of like they're hard. They're just tough nuts to crack. I've even stopped thinking about why, because I don't want to... They're hard, you know. But these other groups are, for some reason, much more receptive. The Latino Hispanics, Filipinos, Vietnamese people, Cambodians. One day, had a real good experience. One day I was around the Long Beach area. We were training up some devotees, you know, just trying to show them how it's done, so to speak. And it was an area I thought was a Latino Hispanic area. Then all of a sudden we must have crossed the line, you know, and we were in little Cambodia. And, you know, I realized, wow, wait a second, this is, you know, these people, I thought they were Vietnamese at first, but then I realized they're all Cambodian. And all we had to do, we opened the Bhagavad Gita, we showed them that little picture of Buddha on the Das Avatar, you know, and I said, look, we also worship Buddha. I said, you know, he's in the picture, he's not the central figure, but he's in the picture. I mean, hey, give us a vena. And they're okay. And they took Bhagavad Gita and they were, you know, they were giving nicely. So all these different groups are good. So, you know, you find out where they are. And then just go shop to shop, house to house in those areas. And if you're organized, if you have the appropriate books, they lap that up. I mean, if you go into like a Cambodian area and you have a book in their language, whew, you're home and hose, you know, you've made it.
Spanish people are very, very, really very nice, Prabhu.
Yeah, they're very nice. They're very devotional.
Yeah, and we had tough time with Chinese, a tough time in the sense they'll take books, some they won't give donation much. So, and some devotees suggesting we need to make one Chinese devotee so that he'll go and distribute books. So,
yeah, I had a good experience just yesterday with a Chinese on the campus there. I stopped this young man, and you know, I use a compliment. That's how I always try to say. A lot of times I use a very corny compliment. I say, sir, I like the hairstyle. I wish I could do that. You know, so anything's better. And they go, what do you mean? I said, well, anything's better than this, you know. And it gets a laugh, you know, it just breaks the ice. So this boy had like one of these mops. He looked like, you know, like a beetle haircut. So I says, oh, sir, I really like that haircut. I wish I could do that. So I, you know, he liked that. He stopped. And I showed him the whole thing. And he was from Guangzhou. And so he spoke, his native tongue was Cantonese as opposed to Mandarin, which is even more difficult than Mandarin. They just... the slightest different inflection of the tones, and it's a whole different word and like that. So we were talking a little bit, and I showed him the books, and he goes, yeah, actually, you know, I had to repeat myself a few times. He says, so what is it? I said, no, we'd like you to take the books and give a donation. He was perfectly articulate in English, and he could understand everything I was saying, but he had to concentrate. As he was at that level of mastery of the language. He got it all together, but he had to concentrate, you know. So I had to repeat. I said, we'd like you to take the book and please give a donation. Okay, yeah, actually, yeah, I will. I like to take this. Okay. So he reached in there to take his wallet, and he, oh, I don't wallet. I said, I thought to myself, I heard that one before, you know. Oh, I forgot my wallet. I left my wallet in the car or something like that. You know, sometimes at the airport, people would say to you, oh, I packed my wallet and my luggage. Did you ever do that? I've never did that in my life. That's people come up. I would never do that. Pack a wallet and your luggage. Can they expect me to believe that? You know, I never said anything like that. Do you think I was born yesterday? Or, you know, give me a break. But anyway, but he said that, and I thought, okay. So he said, but I'll go to my car and I'll be right back. Can you? Where will you be? I said, will you be right here? I said, yeah, I'll be right here. Okay. So I figured, okay, I'll give this guy the benefit of the doubt. So I stayed in that area. And sure enough, about 20 minutes later, I looked down, you know, this is that walkway opposite, adjacent 7th Street, and if you have to from 7th Street. So I looked down, and here's this figure, you know, and this kid. It's him. And he's holding this bill in his hand. Hey! You know, he's saying a big smile on his face, like, here, I'm back. I've got money, you know. And he got close enough, and he gave me a $20 bill, and he took the books. I said, do you want one book or both? He said, oh, no, I want both. So it's the individual, you know, yeah. No, unfortunately, I didn't. I saw Bali Mardan out there, but I didn't. He only had one Chinese book, and so I didn't want to, you know. But I had to give him the two English books. But you know, I think he'll understand it. But if you have a book in their own language, it's wow. We have some Farsi books in Los Angeles. We ordered a big quantity once, and I used to take those to the airport, like, you know, take two or three a day. And when you meet those people who, you know, who are from Farsi is Persians, you know, Iran, and then if you just whip out the Farsi book, oh, that's it. It's like, you know, there's no question of them. They'll take it. And, you know, they'll give even a donation that's much more than what the thing is worth or what it costs us to print. So that's very good if you have the books in their languages, yeah.
We have one of those.
Yeah, that's what we have, that one.
Perfection of yoga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's the way to do it. When you know what communities you got, ethnic, in your area, get those books, get a book in their language, and if they can't speak English, you know, and you could just take the book and just plunk it right in front of them and just go, you know, okay, you know, they'll take it.
Okay, I have a little small experience in book distribution, but I have association. My former good brother in Switzerland. They were distributing books for many, many years in the same country, and they always met same people, and they always got a book from them. Some of them say, oh, I have 33 books. No, but take this one, you don't have 34, and they buy from them. The point is, what also Srila Prabhupada emphasized, that if you are very, very, you know, we have to be just very, very good followers of rule regulations, and being filled with Krishna consciousness, good Shravanam, Kirtanam. And when we go out, you know, naturally people will see, oh, this person, he has something, yeah, you know, very special. They won't buy, even if you, same person again. And I just want to say then, I'm very much, Srila Prabhupada is so much, he wanted actually in the beginning spread movement in India. He's very much concerned for India, and here is so much big community, United States of Indians, and I also think that this will be a very big force for ISKCON, and the more Indians, people who are born in India, join our movement.
That'd be great. So following on from that point and concluding, because it's getting late, I just want to read just one little thing from the excerpt from the purport. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 29, Text 46, Prabhupada says, A pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. And that's, you notice this book, Nectar Book Solutions, the only thing I got marked off there. So this is, for me, this is, I don't know, I hope if I'm understanding it correctly, this is the principle. If the devotees are sincere, you know, then Krishna, as it says here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotees' attempt to deliver the fallen souls, he enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. That's how it really happens. So the real thing is we just have to be sincere, just have to try to follow in the footsteps of Prabhupada and be really sincere. And then Krishna at some point will go, oh, okay. There, what do these devotees want? They want the movement to spread. We're going to have to enlighten some people from within, you know, to become devotees. And I think that's how we're here, you know. Prabhupada was so sincere. I mean, I don't think any of us, we didn't have the qualification to become devotees. Actually, once on a morning walk, a devotee asked Prabhupada that question. They said, Prabhupada, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, it's the first Yesham Tvantagatam Papam, that only one who's sinful activities, only one who's engaged in pious activities in this life and in previous lives and his sinful activities are completely eradicated can engage in devotional service with firm determination. So the devotee started quoting that verse and asked Prabhupada, does that mean that in previous lives, you know, we were engaged in devotional service? And Prabhupada said, he cut him off, he interrupted and says, no, I've created your pious activities. It was Prabhupada. We had no, at least speaking for myself, perhaps those of you from India, you know, Rakshita's father did a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. I mean, I'm not from that kind of a background. I know I had no qualification, or only disqualification. But it was just that, I think it was that Prabhupada had such a sincere desire to execute, fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master, that Krishna just went at some point, okay, I can't see my pure devotee disappointed. So you're not doing anything with your human form of life. So, okay, you know, get up, come forward, get interested in this and help out my pure devotees, so that some of us became devotees like that. You know, the most fallen first. So anyway, unless Sukhurunath would like to say something, we could stop there. Okay. Jai. Thank you very much. Grantarod Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.